All righty, rocking and rolling. It is the Zach Gelb Show, coast to coast on the Infinity Sports Network. This is a surprise. Just exchanged a few text messages with Mike Breen, the voice of the NBA Finals on ABC, is going to join us 20 minutes from now. So we will chat it up with Mike Breen at 5:20 p.m. Eastern, 2:20 p.m. Pacific today. 20 minutes from now, Mike Breen will be joining us on the Zach Gelb Show. All righty, I am off tomorrow, so we're treating today like a Friday. That means we're going to do onside, offside. Stu, hit it, por favor.
Zach's taking on the most polarizing issues in sports. Which side of the line of scrimmage will he end up on?
Offside. Defense number 69.
It's Onsides, Offsides with Zach Gelb.
All righty, Stu Pak Shakur, what do you got cooking today?
All right, so the Pacers took a surprising 2-1 lead in the NBA Finals after their impressive 116-107 win over Oklahoma City last night. This is the second finals appearance for head coach Rick Carlisle after he won the title with Dallas back in 2011. Onsides, offsides, if the Pacers win the title this year, Carlisle will be a top two current coach in the NBA.
So right now, Stu, if I ask you who are the two best coaches in the NBA, would you say it's Spoelstra and Kerr?
Those would be the first two that I think of, yes.
Because now Pop is no longer a head coach.
Right.
I look at Rick Carlisle, already an NBA champion, right? Beat the Heat, too. That was coached by Spoelstra. And when he beat them, he had one star in Dirk Nowitzki. The Heat basically had two stars in LeBron James and Dwayne Wade. And Chris Bosh was on that team, to be fair. But it was viewed as a big three, but I think as it aged, it was a 2.5, if we're just being honest. And Spoelstra since then, after the Heat run with the big three or 2.5, whatever you want to refer to it as, he did go back to two NBA finals with Jimmy Butler. But I look at what Rick Carlisle and what he's done with this Pacers team, already beating Spoelstra and winning NBA finals. And then you have Steve Kerr, who I know has all these championships, and he's won before KD, right? They won during KD and then after KD. I think right now you can make the case he's a top two coach in the league. I would say right now, the three best coaches in the NBA, I go Steve Kerr still one. I would say Carlisle two, and then Spoelstra three. I think most people would say Spoelstra is one. So if the Pacers win the title, Carlisle will be a top two current coach in the NBA. I do think nationally that will start to be the case, but I do believe that you could argue it. I think it's fair to argue it right now, so I'll go on sides.
All right, after the Knicks were denied permission to speak with Jason Kidd, Chris Finch, Ime Udoka, and Quinn Snyder, they have since turned their attention to two surprising former coaches. First is former Cavs, Lakers, and Kings head coach Mike Brown. And new reports say another former Knick head coach, and that is Mike Woodson, is in the conversation as well. Onsides, offsides, the Knicks coaching search has turned into an embarrassment.
I think I'm in the minority here. I'm going to go offside. I think a lot of people are just doing Knicks for clicks. I think a lot of people are just looking at the Knicks and they're reaching out to, like, should they not be reaching out to some of these coaches and see if they're interested? Now, I think it happens a lot more because of the Knicks. I think it's because it gets made public. And once you had two coaches get reached out to and they said no, then all these other reports are going to start to leak as well. Like, the Quinn Snyder one was bizarre to me, if I'm just being honest. The Knicks are going through a process right now. I think they have a plan. I think they're doing their due diligence. They're trying to talk to a lot of people right now. And maybe one of those coaches that their team said no will eventually try to be such a pain in the ass in their organization that they could force their way to New York. I don't think that's impossible. So I'm not going to rule it out just because Jason Kidd and the Mavs say Jason Kidd can't interview, that Jason Kidd doesn't eventually end up being the coach of the Knicks. So if the Knicks been hired 4 days ago, people say, oh, they rushed it. Now, since the Knicks are going through a process, oh, it's way too long. You just can't win. I'm not ready. Until I know who the coach is, I'm not going to say that it's an embarrassment. So the Knicks coaching search has turned into embarrassment. I think that's too premature, so I'll go offside.
Offside!
The draft is 2 weeks away, and most believe that the Bucks will deal Giannis beforehand in order to land a high pick this year. However, Shams joined Pat McAfee yesterday and offered up a surprising timeline.
With Giannis Antetokounmpo, from what I'm told, his status will not be tied to the NBA draft. It won't be tied to free agency. It's much more likely that his future plays out into July and into August in terms of him seeing the landscape of not only the Bucks, seeing the landscape of the league, seeing what other teams do. I mean, listen, when you're a star of that caliber, the league moves how you want it to move. The league will move when you're ready to ask for a trade, or if you're ready to then say, I'm staying. I want to be back.
Onsides, offsides, Giannis will be dealt before the NBA draft.
I'd be surprised by that. Even after just hearing that Shams audio, it seems like it's gonna wait even longer. So I personally think Giannis is going to be there day one, game one coming up this year for the Milwaukee Bucks. Right now I'm at 60% confidence level that's going to be the case. So Giannis will be dealt before the draft, which is right around the corner at the end of the month. I'm going to say offsides there.
Offside.
DK Metcalf is acclimating to his new quarterback in Aaron Rodgers, even after the two worked out together weeks ago. Now, yesterday, Metcalf discussed the benefit of having a veteran like Aaron Rodgers in camp.
Just how cerebral he is and how he views the game. I like the way he views the game, from a receiver standpoint, but also from a quarterback standpoint. I think I can gain a lot of knowledge just from being around him because he's seen a lot of football. So just trying to soak up as much information in the ball as I can.
So onside, offsides, DK Metcalf will beat his career high of 1,303 yards this season with Rodgers.
They're going to pass the ball a lot. 1,300 yards, though, receiving. Here's the thing, though. Samter said it earlier. It's not like they have a lot of options there. So you know what? With George Pickens no longer being there, I'm going to say onsides. I will go onsides on that one, that DK will beat his career high of 1,303 yards this year with Rodgers. A little uncertainty at the running back position. Freiermuth there. Wide receivers, though, not that talented outside of DK. I'm going to say onsides on that one.
All right. Christian McCaffrey led the league in rushing in 2023 and finished third in MVP voting that year, but he missed 13 games last year due to injury. Now, yesterday, the 49ers star back said he's ready to go for 2025.
No, I feel great. I think this offseason I spent a lot of time kind of building back a base, starting from scratch. So a lot of it was rehab. Wanted to put myself in a position where I didn't miss a day of OTAs and I could practice and play football again and be healthy and not miss a day. And I did that. And now it's, we can kind of kick back up the training again. But I feel great.
Onsides, offsides, if he stays healthy, Christian McCaffrey is still the best running back in the NFL.
I had a brain fart there for a moment. So, little inside info here. I have the questions in front of me so I could repeat them. And I just glossed over five, and the next question has to do with Zach Wilson. And I'm hearing that audio, and I go, did Zach Wilson go through puberty? Because that voice sounds very, very deep right now. And then I realized that we were on question five and not question six. So if he stays healthy, McCaffrey's still the best back in the NFL. Saquon had a great year this past year. Derrick Henry is unbelievable. I know it's the two-way threat of McCaffrey. I'm going to say no there. It's close. I don't think you can pick wrong between, if they're healthy, you can't pick wrong between Saquon, Christian McCaffrey, and Derrick Henry. I feel as if even though he's a more physical running back, Henry is less hurt than the other two. And we're usually talking more about McCaffrey being banged up or Saquon being banged up. But I don't think it's a slam dunk that McCaffrey's still the best running back in the NFL. So I'll go offside there.
Offside.
All right. Speaking of Zach Wilson, he joins a long list of Jet quarterback flops, which include Geno Smith and Sam Darnold. However, both Darnold and Smith have resurrected their careers elsewhere. And Dolphins head coach and your guy, Mike McDaniel, well, he hopes that Zach Wilson...
Oh, you're playing audio for Mike McDaniel?
I am.
All right, let me get my earplugs in.
Oh, boy.
All right, go ahead.
He hopes that Zach Wilson can do the same.
There's residuals to people, just in general, that have gone through things that are very beneficial at the quarterback position or just on a football team. But as a football player, he's come close to about as much scrutiny as one could have. Your top three draft pick, he was two, in New York City. And a guy like that, that's continually working at his craft, who has supreme arm talent, it's cool to watch him grow, particularly in our offense. And he looks like a guy that has been through some and found his way through it.
Huh.
All right, Onside's Offside, Zach Wilson.
I think he's auditioning to be a host, a SiriusXM like unfiltered host, if I'm just being honest.
Potty mouth lately.
Yeah, he's really letting it go. Mad Dog Russo wouldn't like, you know, bleep that. Bleep that. Unacceptable. I've never cursed before. I apologize. Anyway, continue.
Onside's Offside, Zach Wilson still has a chance to be an NFL starting quarterback.
In a spot start, maybe. To begin a season? No. No. I know people are going to be like, what about Geno Smith? What about Sam Darnold? The Jets rejects and all that. Yeah, I'm not there. So I will go offside.
Offside.
The Giants and Jets both are entering the season with new quarterbacks, with Justin Fields leading gangrene, while Russell Wilson, Jameis Winston, and Jackson Dart battle it out for Big Blue. Now, the two teams announced they will hold a home and away joint practices, with one practice being at Jets camp and the other one being at Giants camp. Onside's Offside, the Giants will have more wins than the Jets this season.
Oh, that's a great question. Man. So real quickly, I'll do the Giants schedule. At the Commanders to open up the season, loss. At the Dallas Cowboys, loss. Chiefs, loss. Chargers, loss. Rough first four games for the Giants. At the Saints, I'll say win. Eagles, loss. At Denver, loss. At Eagles, loss. San Francisco, loss. Man, the Giants schedule is brutal.
Tough, tough schedule.
You know, Marash's father, he told me the Giants are going to win 10 games when I saw him on Sunday. You know what? I'm not even going to go the full win-loss here with the Giants, because just looking at their schedule, very tough. And maybe I was being a little bit too harsh there. And the Jets, Pittsburgh loss, Buffalo loss, Tampa Bay loss. Maybe it's the same thing. Miami win. Dallas, I'll give them a win. Denver loss. I'll say the Jets have more wins than the Giants. You know, even with Justin Fields as the quarterback. So you asked me the Giants have more wins than the Jets this year. I will go offside.
Offside.
The Oakland, Sacramento, Las Vegas Athletics, whatever they're called now, have been long considered one of the worst franchises in baseball. But now it's official. According to an anonymous poll of 115 players, the A's were ranked last in reputation, with one saying, quote, the way they were fed, the places they stayed were not good, end quote. Onside's Offside, the move to Vegas will turn the A's from a terrible franchise to a good franchise.
So in one breath, you could say, oh, well, the Vegas Golden Knights were an expansion team and they've been one of the better franchises in sports. But then, Stu, had the Raiders been all that great going from Oakland to Las Vegas?
No. They probably have some more money now, but other than that, that's really it.
Well, the move makes sense. I know people say, oh, the A's, their fans got screwed, blah, blah. The move makes sense to go to Vegas. Does it mean all of a sudden that they're going to be a good team because of it? No. Could they be more popular? Could it be more attractive to go to a game there? Could it give you more of an incentive to go there? Could more players maybe? Sure. But does it mean that this automatic, just because you move, you go from a terrible franchise to a good one? I don't think that's the case. I'll go offside.
Offside.
All right, last one here. The U.S. Open teed off today at Oakmont with reigning PGA Championship winner Scottie Scheffler as the heavy favorite to win at plus 250. Now, Scheffler has 9 top 10 finishes and 12 starts this year, including 3 wins, and just needs the U.S. and British Opens to complete the career slam. Onside's Offside, Scheffler will complete the career slam in the next 3 years.
I think so. I think he's getting one more major this year, so that maybe wins his U.S. Open or the Open Championship, and then I do think he'll complete in the next three. Wait, is it the next 3 years? Does that factor in the rest of this year, and then it's 2 more after that?
Correct.
Oh, so not 3 more after that.
Correct. So the rest of this year and the
yeah,
after that.
Yeah, I think so. People may think I'm crazy for that, but yeah, I will go on sides on that. I think he'll have three quarters of the career Grand Slam knocked out by the end of this year. He's already halfway there. All right, it is Zach Gilbert on the Infinity Sports Network. We have a late guest edition, but it's a good one. Mike Breen's going to join us on the show next. All right, it is the Zach Gilbert Show, coast to coast on the Infinity Sports Network. How about the Indiana Pacers? They're up 2-1 in the NBA Finals. Their unbelievable run continues, and we'll see what's going to go down coming up tomorrow night for Game 4. Pacers got that Game 3 victory, a 116-107, and Benedict Mathurin was sensational off the bench with 27 points. The man who was on the call, he is the voice of the NBA. That is the great Mike Breen here with us on the Zach Gelb Show. Mike, appreciate the time as always. Thanks so much for doing this. How you been?
I'm good, Zach. Very good after an unbelievable game last night. We might have a really good long series.
Yeah, it's incredible. Has this series so far exceeded your expectations? Because you never know what to expect, but a lot of people, in terms of what I do for a living, were thinking that the Thunder were going to win this series and win it pretty quickly.
Well, I didn't think that just because of the fact that the Pacers have been playing so well. I mean, their record, they had 18 less wins than OKC during the regular season, but that's because they were hurt early. They were still, you know, trying to grow, and their second half of the season, they were playing as well as anybody, and they've gotten playoff experience. Last year, they went through some tough playoff wars, and I think that was a big part of that. So I'm not shocked. Certainly OKC was the favorite, but I didn't understand why they were such a heavy favorite just because the Pacers were playing so well going into it.
Yeah, and full disclosure, I picked the Thunder in six, and even then, like, people were like, oh, you think this is going six games? But it's still amazing to me with what the Pacers continue to do round in and round out, how there's still people that just are still trying to discredit the great success that they've had this year.
Yeah, I don't know if people are trying to discredit their success. I mean, that's impossible to do. What I think is Oklahoma City was so dominant, not only in the regular season, but in a number of their playoff games, that it was hard not to pick them. I understand that. You can't fault that. And the Pacers, I think they understand that as well. They're enjoying every second of proving people wrong. But this series is far from over. Thunder had the same thing in the second round against Denver. Lost game one at home, lost game three on the road, down 2-1, and they wound up winning that series. So I think both teams have showed they're pretty resilient.
Mike Breen here with us right now, the voice of the NBA, and is on the call, obviously, for the NBA Finals on ABC. How was that environment last night? Because it sounded ridiculous through my TV screen, but for you being there and having the best seat in the house, how would you describe that environment and what you witnessed?
Well, your TV screen gave you a pretty good feeling of what it was like. And what makes it great, Zach, is, you know, the Pacers have never won an NBA title. They were a great ABA franchise, three titles, five finals in 9 years. So, you know, the basketball fans, they experience some professional titles, but never with their Pacers. And the Pacers are so loved here. So the crowd is just off the charts. And it's the same thing in OKC. You know, the Thunder have never won a title in Oklahoma City. When the franchise was in Seattle, you know, obviously 1 year ago. But the two fan bases are so hungry and they so love their teams that, you know, the opportunity to have a dream season end in a championship is pretty special for them. And that's resulted in just off-the-chart crowds.
And you never know what you're going to be able to describe to us when you're calling these games going in. You know, there's storylines, and then there are storylines that none of us could see coming. I know Benedict Mathurin, as of late, has been a good player for them, but 27 points off the bench when the Thunder only had 18 points off the bench as a team. And then an underrated part about the Pacers has been their defense, and the longest tenured Pacer, Miles Turner, at the end. That was a big defensive play. Just how about those two, Mathurin and then Turner?
Yeah, you know what, Zach? There's so many great individual stories. We don't have enough time to get all of them. I wish we had more time to do it because they're, you know, you see what so many of these players go through. Some of them, you know, it's an easy path to stardom. Others have to grind for years. And then the beauty of the finals is that there's always one or two games where somebody comes out of nowhere to have the game of their life. Benedict Mathurin, I mean, he's so young, but he's got so much talent. He just hasn't had a chance to find that consistent level of high excellence. And he showed it last night what he's capable of. But the beauty of that is a guy like him, he knows right now he's part of a great team, and he's okay with that. He'd like to play 35 minutes every night. It's not going to happen. But when we actually talked to him today, and he says, you just have to stay ready. And that's what he did. And for him to come out and have a game like that is magnificent. And Turner, he has such emotional ties to this city and to the fan base. You know, you love to see somebody, you know, achieve their dreams where they wanted to achieve their dreams. Now, he still has two wins to go. But for him to have big games like this, he's had a couple of really great games in the playoffs. It's fun to watch.
as you said, there's two more wins to go for the Indiana Pacers. But you look at Halliburton two and a half months ago, right? We all read that poll in The Athletic that his peers voted in the most overrated player in the league. What he did in the first round, right? Most people would be content having a moment like that in one shot like that in a playoff run. He's had four of them. How do you put it into words, just the stardom of Tyrese Halliburton right now, and he's really been able to do these last 2 months?
Well, he's had such an interesting season. It started back in Paris where he's on the Olympic team. They win a gold medal dramatically, but he doesn't really play a role. But he understood it. Here's this an all-NBA performer who's not getting minutes. Jason Tatum was the same thing, but they were part of a team that won a gold medal, and he was able to gather experience that helps him in his NBA life because of that. Now he starts the season, and he started slowly, wasn't playing well. You mentioned the poll. I hate those polls when that's the question because, you know, somebody's feelings are going to get hurt. But he handled it really, really well, and it's motivated him at times. He plays the game with such joy, and he loves playing that it's good to see him be able to deal with the negative stuff, and it's part of the business. We all know that. And now perform in the biggest games of his life. And I thought last night he played great defense. He's not a great defender, but he played some great defense last night, and that was a big part of why they won.
And we know how many great coaches there are in the NBA. And, you know, we've had a lot, right, change through the year. But what Rick Carlisle's been able to do, and I know he already has an NBA championship, but now this second chapter with the Pacers, and he won that championship with the Mavericks, defeating the big three of the Heat, to see what he's doing this time around, to see that national respect now really be there and be the focus. When a lot of people talk about the Pacers, it's Halliburton and Carlisle. It's pretty cool to see for a guy like Rick Carlisle, who's been doing this for a long time and has had a lot of success.
Yeah, he's, you know, we talk so much about players who improve throughout their careers. Coaches do too, and he was talking about that as well. You know, he was a great coach back when he won the Maverick, won it all with Dallas, and now he's, you know, he's still learning. He's still figuring out the best way for teams to play, best way to communicate with players. You know, he's lived a great basketball life. Larry Bird, when he was Larry Bird's assistant, when they were in the finals back in 2000, Larry Bird used to talk about what a great basketball mind Rick Carlisle was. And if Larry Bird's saying that, that's good enough for me.
And I also thought it was neat, too. And I know sometimes there's a weird relationship that could be painted right now, or a hostile relationship between the teams and the media. When the report from Marchand came out about Doris Burke, I know the broadcasters don't want to be the focus, Mike, especially in an NBA Finals, but I thought that was pretty neat what he said about Doris the other day.
Yeah, we all thanked him for it because he didn't have to do that, especially on that stage. She was overwhelmed by his words and his kindness. And, you know, like I said about Rick, Doris has spent her whole life in the game of basketball. Her passion and her love for the game and her knowledge of the game comes through every broadcast. And Rick pointed out what she has done, her pioneer work, has changed the lives of so many young women who now have the confidence to get into the business and go far. It's there's not many that can say they actually changed the culture. And she certainly did that. And for him to take the final stage and do that was magnificent.
Getting back to the series, Mike Breen here with us for a few more moments on the Zach Gelb Show. You know, after game one, thrilling victory, obviously, by the Pacers. You know, I saw it play out right at Madison Square Garden in game one. I was in the building for that. It was basically the same thing. I was curious what the response of the Thunder was going to be in game two, because, as you know, in that Knicks-Pacers series, the Knicks lost game two, and that's where I really thought they lost the series. The Thunder bounced back. You go to last night, and you see that the Pacers win game three. Now all eyes are on the Thunder again for a game four. The Thunder have had a miraculous season, 62 wins this year by double digits, which is still a ridiculous number and stupid good. What type of response do you think we'll see from the Thunder? Because, you know, all postseason long, I do believe that there have been some people that have been sitting there and saying, all right, when is the inexperience going to show? When is this story going to come to an end? What's the response you think we'll see tomorrow night by the Thunder?
Well, they were saying that in the second round when they were down 2-1 to Denver. And Denver's a brutal place to play. And they won a great game, game four against the Nuggets, that tied that series up. And then they lost a game six and had a game seven. So they've shown every test that's been in front of them they've passed with flying colors. So here's the latest test. It's a legitimate question. Are they still too young? Do they need another year? But they don't feel that way, and they've shown that they're ready. I don't expect anything but a great performance. But again, you never know. In what happens is, does one team have a night where they shoot lights out from three? Does another team have a night where, two of their key players gets in foul trouble early? So you never can, it's so difficult to predict. But I can't imagine them not coming in with their best effort in terms of toughness and defense and playing with force.
When we get to the NBA, outside of the NBA Finals, the biggest story right now is what's going on with the Knicks. You know that organization obviously very well. What's your reaction to Tom Thibodeau getting fired? Were you surprised by it?
Yes. Clearly it's one of the great seasons they've had in a quarter of a century. They make the conference finals. It just seemed everything was so positive. Obviously ended in a disappointing fashion, but we're seeing, the Pacers are a heck of a team, and that wasn't easy, even though the Knicks won more games during the regular season. So it was hard to see, but, Tom Thibodeau's been around a long time, and I'm sure he was disappointed, but it's part of the business that teams sometimes think that for them to take the next step, they need to change voices. It's taking a gamble, letting Tom Thibodeau go, but obviously they had reasons for doing it, and now the search is on, and they still haven't figured out what to do. But quite honestly, right now, they shouldn't be in a rush. They should, turn over every stone before they make a decision and see what would be the best fit for the team going forward.
Yeah, and I agree with what you said at the end, because a lot of people right now are sitting there and saying, hey, this has turned into an embarrassment. They don't have a plan. But if they would have hired a coach 5 days ago, people would have said that they didn't do their due diligence and they rushed too quickly. So what do you say to people that look at Leon Rose right now and the Knicks organization right now and say they don't have a plan currently?
Well, they clearly had a number of candidates that they were thinking, let's talk to them. And sometimes teams allow their head coach, if the head coach doesn't want to go or they want to part ways, to talk to other teams. The coaches they have expressed interest in are all really good coaches, and you can understand why the teams don't want to let them go. But that's what they're doing. They're checking all the boxes to see who's going to be best, because it's a tough job who takes over. There's a lot of pressure. You went to the conference finals this year, and now you're expected to take the next step. So they want to make sure they get it right.
Do you think experience is required there? Do you think they have to hire a coach that has experience, or could they take a chance on someone that knows the organization like a Johnny Bryant?
Well, even the some of the greatest coaches, all of the greatest coaches who've ever coached basketball on any level, they had to get that first head coaching job. So, sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. Sometimes it takes a few years for a first-year head coach to kind of get his feel and get his feet underneath him and figure out the best way to coach. Other times the best approach is to get somebody who's been there before, who knows what it's like, the ups and downs of being a head coach, of coming in and trying to meet expectations. It's all a matter of your feel as an organization when you interview people. Do you get the right vibe? Is this the guy for you? And any time you hire somebody, it's always taking a chance, but that's why you make sure that you go through all the process to make sure you talk to everybody and figure out who's going to be the best to fit your team.
Last thing I'll ask you, Mike Breen, just from a broadcaster's perspective, so you do the game last night. When you walk out of the stadium, what is that like for you until what you do today to get you ready for the turnaround tomorrow for a game four?
Well, you're exhausted because it's such a fun night, and you put a lot of work in during the course of the day. But then, of course, you can't go to sleep because you're wired, because it's so exciting and the adrenaline's flowing. Get a little rest. We met with players today and talk to them about tomorrow, and time to get back to work and get ready for tomorrow night.
And you have the best call going when people were disappointed in game one when you didn't say bang for Halliburton. I'm surprised by the blowback you got for that.
I guess it's a compliment. They like the call. I didn't expect to have people angry with me, but that's okay. All that means, Zach, is that they love the game, they're passionate, and when you get to the playoffs, that passion skyrockets.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, he's the best call in the NBA in the business. He is Mike Breen, the voice of the NBA. And you can obviously watch him call these great games on ABC and ESPN for the NBA Finals. Mike, we appreciate it. Thanks so much.
Okay, Zach, nice talking to you.
Yes, yes, it is the Zach Gelb Show right here on the Infinity Sports Network. Real quickly, let me reset the poll question here. And it has to do with the NBA Finals. Last night, the Indiana Pacers took a 2-1 series lead on the NBA Finals. And we'll see if they could find a way to go up 3-1 coming up tomorrow night. They go up 3-1 tomorrow night. Anyone that was saying that the Pacers can't win this series, I'll be curious to hear what you'll then have to say after that. But I do... He didn't say it necessarily. But the way that you... Because he can't say who's going to win the game when he's calling the games. But the bounce back factor of the Thunder and the way that they have responded to adversity before, and I've said this point before in the postseason, we've seen them down before, or we've seen them in big situations. And that Denver series is a big situation, right? And when they were down in that game seven going into the second quarter, clearly the game's not over. But how they basically said checkmate by the start of the second quarter to the end of the second quarter, the experience or the lack of experience factor to me went right out the window. So I look at this Thunder team. I do think they're going to tie it up at two apiece. And then it's a best of three to go win an NBA championship. And if you do see the Thunder win tomorrow night, I would then venture to say that the Thunder win game five. I would then probably think the Pacers win game six. And then you throw the ball up in the air for a game seven. But if the Pacers win tomorrow, my line of thinking would then be, all right, you go back to OKC, OKC wins game five, and then the Pacer closes out in six. That's just the way that I would think about it. And imagine if you said before the start of this NBA Finals, the Pacers win in six. If you were picking the Pacers, you're picking the Pacers in seven. And I can't remember one person that picked the Pacers. I took the Thunder in six, and I thought I was on an island. Stu and Santers looking at me saying, oh, this is five. Five, easy peasy, five. But now you look at this. Who wins the NBA Finals? That's our poll question today. At Zach Gelb on Twitter, Z-A-C-H-G-E-L-B. If you don't follow us, make sure you do follow us. And a lot of people that I meet, they go, oh, listen to the show. And they tweet me, oh, nice to meet you. And I go, oh, you're not following me on social media. So follow on Twitter, follow on Instagram, at Zach Gelb, Z-A-C-H-G-E-L-B. Right now, though. 19.3% say Thunder in six. 19.3% say Thunder in six. 20.5% say Pacers in seven. 27.3% say Pacers in six. And 33% say Thunder in seven. So the listening audience, that's telling me they still believe that Thunder are going to win this series. But it would have to be in seven. People are showing some respect now to the Pacers where they're not just saying, oh, it's 2-1, that's going to be the last one they win in this series. Because Thunder in six is the lowest rated returns at 19.3. Now, I think the people that say Pacers in six, they think the way that I at least just laid it out, not the way that I think the series is going to go, that the Pacers find a way to win tomorrow night, then they lose game five in OKC, and they come on back and they win game six. In Indianapolis. By the way, the NBA final schedule, I do like how we have a little layoff here where it's not a long layoff, where the game is played on Wednesday, you're off Thursday, then you play Friday at 8:30 p.m. Eastern time. That's good. That's very good because what game two was, that was Sunday? Yeah, game two was Sunday. And we had to wait Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday to get to the NBA, get to NBA Finals Game 3. So having that little layoff, Wednesday play, Thursday rest, Friday go, is spectacular. The rest of the final schedule, though, the rest of the way, would be... Where'd this go? Sorry, folks. I just had this right here. You would then have Game 5 would be Monday. Game 5 would be Monday, and that would be in Oklahoma City. Then you would have 2 days off, Tuesday, Wednesday off. Game six, if necessary, would be on Thursday. And then if there is a game seven, Friday, Saturday, off, Sunday would be the game seven right at 8 p.m. Eastern time between the Pacers and the Thunder. So the farthest the NBA season could go is June 22nd. The fact that you're saying in this series, the farthest it goes is June 22nd. Everyone told me it's going to be easy-peasy series. It's going to be over in a snap of a finger. Well, Here we are, Pacers up 2-1 in the NBA Finals. I'll tell you, I have not looked at a gambling spread. So let me just see here. Ooh, okay. Thunder Pacers, Stu. Prognosticate the line. Yesterday, the Oklahoma City Thunder were a 5.5-point favorite. I said, this is Vegas begging me to fall into the trap. You know, basically, like I'm the Edmonton Oilers, where the Panthers are daring me. I put my hands in the trap, and then they just eat me up. And that's what happened. Because I said, I'm going to lose this bet. I'm going to lay the 5.5 points and watch. The Pacers are going to cover the spread. And that's exactly what ended up happening. So I'm out of $50. I lost $50 last night. Thunder Pacers game 4. Tomorrow night, 8:30 p.m. Eastern time. Mike Breen on ABC. What do you think the spread is right now?
So it's at Indiana, but this is obviously a must win for the Oklahoma City Thunder. So I think they're going to be favored. I'm going to say they're going to be favored by 4.5. Thunder, 4.5.
4.5 is the guess. We go to our resident bookie, Michael Samter. Thunder and Pacers. What do you think the line is for tomorrow night?
I'm going to go Thunder by 2.5.
It is Thunder by 5.5, the same spread it was for game 3. And you know what? Even though I opened up the show saying people are disrespectful to the Pacers and how dare Pat Boyle not give the Pacers their credit, I'm probably going to lay the 5.5 points with the Thunder. Probably going to do that. All righty, before we get on out of here, let's do this. We'll go around the room. We'll squeeze in one more NBA topic. So players will make the biggest bounce back in the NFL this year. So potential comeback player of the year are guys that you look at that maybe had a bad season last year, they'll bounce back this year. I'll start you off. We'll go 2 each, but Stu, give me one.
All right, my first one will be Trevor Lawrence. I think the fact that he didn't have a great year last year, you get the new coach and Mr. Duval, Mr. Liam Cohen.
Mr. Duval.
You would think that Travis Hunter, at least in some, you know, some way, he's going to play a factor on offense. So I think Lawrence will have a much better year.
Okay. Samter, who's your first bounce back player?
I'm going to go Dak Prescott. I think with a new offense and a new coach, you add Pickens, so he has more weapons. I'm going Dak.
And by the way, I said earlier, just to follow up with Stu, I don't know why I let Samter speak and I forgot to say what I wanted to say there. Brian Thomas Jr. had an injury scare yesterday. So he did get injured, but he's supposed to be okay, and he ended up returning to practice. So that's good to see today. I saw some more reports come out that he returned to practice and now he is fine. My first bounce back player, I'm saying Aiden Hutchinson. Aiden Hutchinson was on the verge of being one of the best pass rushers in the league. The Lions are on the verge of maybe going on having a special season. They were able to still have a good regular season without him. Now he's coming on back, and I think he's coming on back with a vengeance. I think he's going to be sensational this year. Aiden Hutchinson is going to be a player that has a massive bounce back season. Stuart, who's your next player?
My next player is Deebo Samuel going from the 49ers to the Commanders. Your guy, Deebo Samuel.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes, I think going, you know, going to a
Jaden. Stu's not a loyal guy. That's what I just learned.
Going to a Jaden Daniels-led offense, I think will maybe light a little fire under him. And I don't think he's going to be the same Deebo he was from 3 or 4 years ago, but I think he's going to have a much better year than he did last year.
I think he fits very well there. And you get into a red zone. You think red zone right now, what are some of like the worst red zone combinations in terms of nightmares if I'm a defender? I'm thinking Derrick Henry, Lamar Jackson. I'm thinking Jalen Hurts and Saquon Barkley. That's a quarterback throwing a running back. Deebo could be used as a running back. He could be used as a wide receiver. You get inside the 20s, and you have Jaden Daniels as your quarterback, Terry McLaurin as a wide receiver, Brian Robinson Jr., who's a good, solid running back, and then you do have Deebo Samuel. A lot of creativity that you could do with Deebo on that offense. So I think that's actually a good one. And surprisingly, I'll even give Deebo praise. I don't think Debo's going to be great this year, but I do think Debo's going to be solid this year. Mr. Samter, your final bounce back player.
I'm going to go with my boy Tua Tagovailoa. When he's healthy, I think he is an elite, not elite, a top level, second tier type quarterback who can throw the ball all over the place with two great wide receivers and a good run game. So if he's healthy, I think Tua's going to have a great year.
When you say second tier, what number are you throwing out there for Tua?
When he's healthy, 7.
Really?
8. Yeah.
Oh, cool. Yeah.
I mean, just look at his numbers when he's healthy. See, look at that offense when he's healthy.
You're a big numbers
and look at that. But it's not just that. Look at that offense when he gets hurt and they have a backup in there. If the offense was as good as we all think that the offense should be, it wouldn't fall off from here down to here.
He proved his worth last year. There's no doubt about it.
I think Tua is a very – I think he's a top eight quarterback when he's healthy.
Okay. I think he's outside of the top 10, but I think the highest you could go with him is 10, and probably the lowest you could go with him is 13 or 14th. Bill Belichick is on line one, 888-710-4ISN. Bill, what do you have to say? Stats are for losers. All right, thanks, Bill. We appreciate it. Go enjoy Jordan Hudson. My last player here, I am going to go with J.J. McCarthy. I think J.J. McCarthy, who was out all last year with the injury that he suffered, I think J.J. McCarthy is set up with bumpers around him right now. And I think J.J. McCarthy, they're going to ask him to do more than what they asked him to do at Michigan. I think J.J. McCarthy could have some rookie moments, but I believe he's going to have a really good statistical season at the end of the year. You look at those weapons, Jefferson, Addison, Hockenson, Aaron Jones, the play calling of Kevin O'Connell, the underrated mobility of a J.J. McCarthy too. I believe J.J. McCarthy is going to have a really good season this year. All right, that will do it for the Zach Gelb Show on the Infinity Sports Network. I'm off tomorrow. I'll be back on Monday at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific time. Big thanks to Luke Altmaier for joining us from the Illinois football team. Big thanks to Bang! Mike Breen for stopping on by. Enjoy Andy Gresh in for me tomorrow. I'm going to the golf course. I'll talk to you Monday, everybody. We out. Bye-bye. Peace.